Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel center resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry at Midwestern Seminary and author in residence. And I'm here as always. I threw myself off. I messed up the intro because I was emphasizing that. Last time you said I emphasized at.
Yeah.
So I thought, let me emphasize professor or another different word. Wow. I'm here with my colleague and my friend and my co-host, CMR, just getting everything out of order. Ferguson, comma, Ross.
Yeah, great.
How are you, brother?
Just great start, you know.
You know, inspired by today's subject, not really inspired by today's subject, but related to today's subject, maybe, I don't know. I've been listening to a lot of Michael W. Smith lately.
Oh, wow.
Are you a Michael W. Smith?
Maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Well, same. I've not listened to Michael W. Smith in more than that, probably 20-something years. And I don't even know how I got, you know, tipped on this, but the other, oh, I know what it was. There was some Christian retro Twitter account or something that posted a graphic from one of his albums from like the early 90s, like 92, 91. And I'd forgotten that existed. It like unlocked this core memory. And I thought, I'm going to listen to this stuff that I used to listen to. So, you know, millennials have Taylor Swift, or they had Taylor Swift. You know, Taylor Swift understands them.
Are you about to compare?
They're like 13, 14-year-olds. They're listening to Taylor Swift, and it's, you know, oh, yeah, you know, they feel what I feel. We had Gen Xers, Christian Gen Xers. We had Michael W. Smith.
Yeah.
He got us.
Yeah.
And so when I was like 12, 13, 14 years old, right in that age range, the Michael W. Smith albums, he was singing about you know, not given, you know, up your virginity. He was singing, I mean, he was singing all the stuff that we were hearing in youth group. He was singing about all the stuff of, you know, low self-esteem, you know, friends who would compromise their Christianity. I mean, he was singing about all these things, you know, and it was like, it just, I remember he even wrote a couple of books. One was called Old Enough to Know, which was also the name of one of his songs. And the book was all about like, you're going through changes in life, you know, and it's the Michael W. Smith book for, you know, for teenagers on how to, you know, hold tight to your faith or whatever. And so I just like, he was my Taylor Swift in junior high school and early high school until I moved on. Like, you know, I graduated to like, you know, Keith Green and some Christian death metal and things like that. But
I don't know if I ever listened to a whole album. I feel like I just knew songs from the Wild Worship CDs.
Okay. I wore them out. So I have been listening to the album so I can get the experience.
Okay.
So not just like a Michael W. Smith playlist.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been listening to these early albums. And so Sunday morning on the way to church, I played The Big Picture, which is an early album of his. It's not the earliest, but it's a pretty early album of his. And man, I'm having these flashbacks of like listening to the cassette tape on my Walkman. Yeah. In the back seat of my parents' car as we like, we drive around and like, man, he's really speaking right to my heart. And then the last couple of days, he had an album called Eye to Eye, and it's spelled lowercase I, number 2, EYE, Eye to Eye. It's a gray, he had kind of a yuppie look.
Uh-huh.
He had like these round glasses and like a gray tweed coat or something and spiky hair. So like he changed his look through every album. And I started listening to Eye to Eye. And man, it's unlocked these memories. I remember getting this album for Christmas when I was probably eighth grade, maybe. And I also got on the Nintendo Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I played Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles while I listened to Eye on repeat. And so as I'm driving, I'm listening to these songs, man. Not only have I not heard these songs in 30 some years, I'm singing along because I listen to it so much. It's like ingrained.
Remember.
Yeah, I remember these lyrics. So I'm singing along. Like, I don't even know how I remember this. But I'm also visualizing levels of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles because the song is so connected. You know how like a memory might, you know, you smell something and it takes you back to grandma's kitchen. Well, I hear Eye to Eye and I immediately think of trying to defeat, you know, these things in the sewer and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's the mixed up, you know, life that I've
got. I feel
got.
Like that's quite a passionate review of Michael Tommy Smith.
Man, there's some interesting, Live and Learn is a good song.
I feel
look
like
up Live and Learn
that age range, I was listening to DC Talk.
Oh, okay.
At that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to think what else.
I listened to them too.
And I listened to Bebo Norman quite a lot.
Okay.
And then also Cavemen's Call.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
That's the kind of three I listen
yeah.
to a lot.
Yeah, for me, that was like late high school, early yeah. like college. Yeah.
I'm younger than you, so.
Yeah, it actually would have been after high school. It would have been yeah. college, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when you were like describing like, this is what we had, I was like, that's not what I had, Dad.
So you didn't have a Walkman that you put a cassette tape in?
I actually did, but for a very short time. Then we had a CD.
Yeah.
But then we had mini disc players. Did you ever have them here in the States?
I never had a mini disc.
We had mini disc players, and then it was MP3 players. And MP3 players were always horrendous.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like... If I was trying to look for it for our kids, I was trying to look for like a iPod type thing now, and they don't really sell them now because it's all through phones. Like you have to kind of get a phone, and yeah. we've had our youngest, we gave her an MP3 player, and it just doesn't really work very well. So it's like to try and avoid giving them phones. But yeah, I had a very different, but then I had a very eclectic music growing up, and I've in some levels I've not really grown up with music, but I played the drums when I was younger, still do, but so anything with a little bit more beat to it. Mm-hmm. I used to be really into hip hop and rap as well.
Yeah.
I occasionally play songs in the car and the kids are like, why do you know the words of this song, Dad? It's like, because there's a life before you. That's right. Why.
Yes, yes. There is BC. There is before children.
So there is a good transition here.
Yeah.
To what we're talking about.
It's worship.
It's worship.
We're continuing our, you know what, we're going to banter, I guess it's the spirit of banter. You know, I had this idea, this is me getting sidetracked.
What's going on with this episode?
I had this idea that we would do an episode where, and I was just going to call it Just Banter.
Just, oh.
Where we just talk about whatever we want to talk about.
I like that.
And we just do 20, 30 minutes of, so, you know, maybe
like
we should
that.
Try that at some point.
We should.
But that's not today.
That's not today.
We're going to banter about a particular subject. So we're calling it mixing it up. So last week we talked about preaching. We mixed it up about preaching. Today we're going to mix it up about worship. The first thing I want to say is I don't like even the title that I'm giving this episode because worship, we're really going to talk about worship music. But we both agree that worship is not synonymous with music or limited to music. That's just how people refer to Christian music or church music today is. It's our time of worship. Mm. But it always sort of, I don't know, something in my head kind of goes off whenever I hear people say, we're going to have a time of worship and then so-and-so is going to get up and preach. And I was like, well, isn't the whole time worship?
Yeah.
Shouldn't the preaching be worship? So we're acknowledging that if you're upset about the title that we're talking about, mostly music and kind of what goes on in a worship service, don't get mad at us. We know all of life is worship. We understand that.
And that's how
but
they
that's
speak.
Not what this episode's about.
It's like that's how they speak when they complain as well.
That's right. Hey, all of life is worship.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, man, that's really insightful. That's
one,
really deep. Thanks.
I had one off like, why do you always call it the worship team?
Mm.
Like, the rest of us are not worshiping.
Ooh, like, I think it's because it's not a competition.
So now I call them the music team. So, just like,
so it's not team that they were.
It was worship.
It's the worship.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were like, why do you call worship team?
Yeah.
Well, they're not a team. They're not playing against anybody.
Okay, music group.
Music group. Yeah. Yeah.
Those that play instruments and lead while we're singing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
song leaders.
So, I'm preaching this Sunday, and I'm gonna struggle at the end of the sermon. I'm like, worship music lead.
Hey,
people.
You squad.
Yeah,
we're gonna have the musicians.
If
come
you
up.
Use your fingers on the piano, please come up. So let me start here. I don't know why I always want to ask questions, but I do want to ask.
We started 8 minutes
questions.
Ago.
Yeah, well,
you
let's start the topic.
Okay,
now,
I got you.
You know. One of the questions I want to ask is, what do you like in a worship service? Like when you think about music, prayer, liturgy, all those things, like what do you like personally? Let's not go too deep too quickly, but what is it just you would like?
What would I like?
Yeah. What do you enjoy?
I mean, content-wise?
Content-wise.
Okay. I like a focus on Christ.
Oh, he went deep straight away.
Sorry, that deep? I mean, I have worked hard, or at least it has been hard, I guess I should say, to kind of rid myself of this evaluative, which would have been a very dominant thing in my life. In the first part of kind of my ministry life, you're evaluating the whole service about how it's going to impact unbelievers, which is a good thing to evaluate. But just it was the number one thing on my head is, is this excellent? Is this polished? Is this clever? Is this creative?
Yeah.
Is it flashy enough? Those sorts of things. Is it interesting, unique, et cetera? And so I was just constantly evaluating everything, which just takes you right out of, you know, the worship. And then for a while, even after kind of my gospel awakening, it was, is this gospel centered enough? Is it, you know, and I still think that's a good thing to evaluate as well. But it's taken me so long to kind of just get out of, you know what? I'm not going to the service so that it might fulfill my preferences or that we sing just the songs I want to sing or any of those, you know, obviously we all have preferences. That's just natural. But I don't want to go in my natural mind. I want to go in with the, you know, with a grace that I've embraced. And so now the you know, there are things that bug me. There are things that I don't like and all that sort of thing. We can talk about those things. But mainly I'm just the thing I notice is there was no Jesus.
Yeah.
There was the songs didn't exalt Jesus. The prayers didn't really have anything to do with the gospel, the liturgy, the prayer of confess. Like there's just things that. That's the thing that I notice the most, and it's the thing I care the most about. Yeah. And it's the thing that I walk out, if I walk out going, oh, man, they really fumbled and stumbled through all of that, or I would not have picked those songs or whatever, but they preached Christ. I'm satisfied that, that I heard the gospel.
Yeah, I would phrase it in this way, that I like not to be distracted. And and what where I get distracted is exactly how you've described, like where it's uber professional. So then it feels like we're in a concert. It's
or there's no excellence at all.
Or there's the other side. I was about to say there's the other side where you're just thinking, you should not be playing.
Or speaking.
Or speaking. Where it's overtly preachy all the way through. So actually we're almost being not handheld, but actually like pulled as in it feels unnatural in that sense. Also on the flip side where there's like little sermonettes before every song or prayers are far too long or it's over-prepared, under-prepared, too many musicians, too few musicians. Like what I'm kind of just saying is that whoever has put the service together has thought through all of these things. That's something I really like. That's something that I'm glad that happens because I find that that means that I can then come to worship knowing that someone's got this, someone's figured this out, someone's chosen this song for a reason, someone's thought through how do I gain the whole congregational singing this? Why am I leading this day? Why am I using these words? Let's get rid of these distractions. Don't worry about these mistakes. Just keep playing. You know, like having someone that has done that with the service for me really helps.
Yeah.
When I go to churches where it's the opposite, where it's like way overdone or it's way underdone, I find both sides a distraction.
Same. Yeah. Well, I've heard the phrase, maybe you've heard it too, undistracting excellence.
Yeah.
So it's not an excellence like, hey, we're really embracing production values and it's just so polished and everything moves so smoothly that it's like you're watching a concert or
you feel disconnected.
Yeah. It's almost as not even, you're not really engaging us. It's a, it's a performance of some kind. Yeah. And that even goes across music into the preaching sometimes where it's just like, oh, it's almost incidental that we're even here. Mm-hmm. We're observing this thing that's happening.
Yeah.
So it's so excellent that it's really just sort of a stage production of some kind. And that takes me out of it, like you said.
Yeah.
But there is a, you know, such a thing as having an undistracting lack of excellence or a distracting lack of excellence as well. So there is the, oh, it's so sweet. We're all a family.
Yeah.
We can all kind of, you know, overlook each other's flaws and stumbles. And, oh, it's cute that he messed up there and that sort of thing. But there's some point where it's sort of like, okay, this it's not cute anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, we've got visitors who come in and they're like, is this how they approach the service with a lack of preparation? And when things look sort of normative, you know, there's things that I, you know, I just think, you know, maybe rehearse some of that, you know, in between banter, maybe script some of those things, maybe, you know, some of those things that I just think, okay, this is a pattern.
Yeah.
And there could be some room for improvement here where you're not putting the burden on the church to go, oh, that's just so-and-so. We're, you know, we're just, you know, one big family here and we overlooked that. And if I'm a visitor coming in, I'm just thinking, oh, they're not really put together. They're not actually pursuing excellence. They're just kind of throwing this thing together at the last minute.
One of the great examples of that, it was actually the Gettys, Keith and Kristen Getty. Highly professional, do this as their kind of job, you know, multiple albums, travel, tour, all these things. They were at an event and they were leading worship and the timing was just slightly off in the first verse. And Keith just stopped everybody and just went, hey, we haven't quite got this right on stage. Give me 1 second. He turned around. He said a few words to everybody, started again. He said, we'll now lead you into the song again. And they started again and they went for it. And it was like a beautiful moment of just almost that humility of, we're trying to lead you to the throne of Christ in your worship. We're not doing a great job right now. Give us a few seconds. Let us, you know, deal with the issues we've got and then we'll go again. And there was a beauty in saying, like, this is a distraction if we keep going, and actually the better way of handling this is just stop, start again, thing.
What's some weird things you've seen in a worship service?
Weird and funny. I've seen a drummer hit his stick and the stick goes flying, hits the guitarist on the back of the head. So I've seen things like that.
It's not on purpose.
Not on purpose.
He hit the drum and it kind of popped off.
Smoke machines. I just find them weird. Why you think like the lead singer needs to have smoke going up their leg? Like I don't get it. You can say atmosphere. It's just junk.
Like I could just, say... I mean, not to play devil's advocate here, but, you know, they would probably point back to there was a time where in the high church tradition, you know, incense and candles or whatever. Like, what's the difference between incense and candles to, you know, the hazers and the lights and whatever else?
I did go to one where there was laser beams.
And I just want to say, like, how about we don't have either? Like, you're right. Listen, you know, I don't want candles and
like
incense
either. Disco laser beams that like, they just annoy me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the weird side. What I would say, I haven't experienced like odd, weird, crazy stuff. I would just say I've experienced the modern, extreme, contemporary stuff. And every single time it just like, I don't get this.
Yeah.
And it feels just like you're trying to produce an experience.
So at the attractional church that we were part of in Nashville for a while, they had different worship leaders. There's probably like 3 or 4 different music leaders. And so they had different bands or different configurations of bands. And they would do different genres just about. So every, you know, 3 weeks or 4 weeks, there was a different sort of set with a different genre. So you would go and sometimes it would be, oh, this is the R&B kind of morning. This Sunday, it's more R&B, soul, you know, music. Oh, this Sunday, it's more country and Western kind of music. And in fact, the main worship guy was a former country artist. He wasn't like a superstar guy, but, you know, he had music videos and things. So, I mean, he had some success. And then another Sunday you'd come in and it would be, you know, I don't know. But there was one particular guy who was, he was the young guy. And I know, you know, I'm dating here. This was, you know, myself. This is probably early 2000s. This is probably 2004, 2005. And it was more like a techno genre.
Yeah.
So synthesizers and he was a keyboard guy. And there was a song that they would do, and almost none of these songs, sometimes the country and Western maybe, they were never picked, as far as I could tell, for congregational singing. They were what this band wanted to play
and
what they thought, you know, I guess theoretically, what they thought lost people would think would be cool if they came to visit. Oh, look how cool this church is. It was all very performance. So like they would say, come on, sing with us, you know, and like, well, you're not singing anything that we can sing. And it's just a concert. You're watching a concert for 4 or 5 songs. And that's what this techno thing, what you certainly could not sing to any of this techno stuff. It was just this guy thought it was cool. And there was some song, and I don't remember what the song was. It was some worship song, theoretically, that was in a techno deal. It had like a little, you know, whatever. And in the middle, they would break into this song called, I don't know what it's called, but it's like Blue. I'm blue. Have you heard that song?
Yeah.
It's like an alien or something.
Yeah.
They would break into that. Like it was like this cool sort of like transition. We're going to do that for a minute. And you could see them on stage. Like they loved that they were doing this. And all the rest of us in the quote unquote congregation, if you can even call us that, we're more like an audience. We were just standing out there like,
what is this?
And every Sunday, that was the feeling. Even in this attractional church, like I didn't get the sense that anyone felt that it was cool. I think they all felt what I felt, even when I was in the middle of the attractional thing. Like, even this is kind of weird for us.
Yeah.
Like, I can't sing to this. Like, what exactly are we doing here? That's maybe the weirdest thing. One. And I know people, you know, who've grown up like in charismatic circles and stuff. Yep. They've seen some really weird stuff.
Yep.
You know, I love my charismatic brothers, but there's some weird stuff in that camp, guys.
I just haven't personally.
That's maybe the weirdest thing. Yeah, I've never really seen anything totally outrageous.
Into that. Have you experienced different cultures for worship? So in my last church, we had a Chinese church that would use our building. And theirs were voices only, very traditional hymns, obviously sung in Chinese, but felt, I'm trying to think of the word, like just more serious. I don't know if that was a cultural thing, but it just generally seemed more serious. Like you would, you know, hands almost like clasped. There'd be no clapping, no hands raised, you know, no movement of any sort in that sense. I think that's the only cultural experience I've had. Have you had any different kind of cultural, different experiences?
Yeah, not to the, I don't know, to that side, but maybe to the other side where it was a little more animated. I've been in Honduran churches. I've been in Northern Ireland churches. I've been in Australian and New Zealand. And some of those were very diverse. I remember there was one trip to Australia where I spoke in multiple churches across like a 14-day span, including there was a Sunday where I preached in one church one morning and then went to a different service and then Sunday evening in a whole different church. And even in the span, so like I did this Sydney Anglican church in Chatswood section of Sydney, and they had a quite significant Chinese population. Yeah. And you know, the music in, if you're hearing Anglican, probably stateside, you may think high church. Sydney Anglicans are low church, so they would have more of a contemporary, you can dress casual. It would be like, in some ways, except for the Anglican theology, like walking into a Baptist church or a non-denominational church. So it wasn't like high church, but it was very reserved, I guess, immigrant, you know, population. They were very conservative in that. And that kind of, and I think Sydney Anglicans tend to be pretty, you know, reserved anyway. But then the same day, I went to another church in Sydney, and I forget the name of it, but there was like an islander population. I mean, it was essentially not Aborigine, Pacific Islander kind of. So not like Maori, like where you'd find in New Zealand, but yeah, the people group is. I'm missing that right now, but essentially it was an islander people. Yeah. And it was their church. Not charismatic, but very dynamic, very engaged, clapping, even kind of
swaying,
almost dancing kind of back and forth and singing very loudly. Mm. The songs were not much different than what we would sing here at our songs, just kind of contemporary praise songs, but they felt these songs and it was very much so. Yeah, you know, getting that kind of array of energy levels or exuberance was really interesting in the same day, in the same place.
I was talking recently to one of our Malawian students here on campus, and he was saying worship was very different in Malawi. So tend to have a more Pentecostal church, but he said even on the kind of more conservative churches, it would worship would extend out. It would be several hours. They would tend to have more kind of louder singing, more dancing, to some extent more free in terms of movement and sound. But again, similar in terms of actual wordings and things like that are the same.
Yeah.
So I think there are cultures that are just the culture that you live in will often influence your worship in terms of just stylistically, even just what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Scottish, so I'm not comfortable with movement. So it's just the idea of clapping and things, you know.
Is this a phenomenon? Let me see if I can describe this phenomenon that happens over here. And maybe you've been here long enough to see it, but I don't know if it happens in Scotland or if there's a variation of it. And it's basically when a church gets trapped in time. And I don't mean like they like the old hymns, like our church sings the old hymns. Those, I don't mean that they have an appreciation for and a retrieval of classical things or traditional things. I mean, like 1990s or late 80s or whatever. And that was the last moment that the church really was vibrant or growing. And now the church is probably predominantly older folks.
Yes.
Who, you know, God bless them. They, you know, were the core of that church, you know, 40 years ago or 30 years ago. But they've never moved on. And so the worship leader is himself, you know, 80 years old, and nothing against older worship leaders. But it's as if somebody just said in 92, pause.
Yep.
And this is where we're going to, we're just going to do this now for the rest of our duration. And you sometimes walk in and go, well, I understand why all these people like this. And I'm not a seeker church guy, but anyone else who walks in off the street is going to be like, what is happening here? It looks like 1992.
100%. You're looking at the country churches and coastal churches in the UK. So in Scotland specifically, basically outside of the city, you're going to experience that almost every church that you go to. It would be rare for the other way that they're actually have kind of modernized. My mother-in-law goes to a church in South Wales, and I would say they've done a great job where historically they would have been paused in like one timeline. But they have a great guy right now leading them and has kind of like modernized their building, kept some of the really good older stuff, but also brought in some newer kind of styles, techniques, different things, and just really good. But that would be pretty rare, I would actually say, and kind of frowned upon. Like you're changing like the world is changing. Yeah. We don't change because you know we're like this.
Well, I sometimes wonder because it's a very boomer, like you know, baby boomer kind of mode to be in, and I wonder if it was a huge shift for the baby boomers to move. So back in the 80s and early 90s, when they would have been in their 40s or what have you, they would have been mid age or right before midlife. They shifted from the traditional.
Yeah.
So I'm just even thinking, I mean, I'm not a baby boomer. I'm not in my 70s and 80s. But when I think back to when I was a kid watching this transition from traditional to what we would call contemporary. And we moved from, we're singing three or four hymns with an organ or a pianist, and maybe there's a couple other, but that's really it. You have one guy who's kind of leading the congregation, and there's maybe a couple of musicians. To now, we're going to have multiple musicians and not just one guy leading. Maybe there's a main leader, but there's a praise team.
Yeah.
There's a chorus.
Yeah.
So you've got this kind of, and I just wonder if the boomers are like, this is a huge shift.
Yeah.
We're changing the world with this.
Yeah.
And then they were just like, hey, we did it.
We did it. No, we don't need to.
We don't need to change it. Like, that was a big enough change. We're going to like freeze that and no more changes. And I'm sure this is true of every generation. Like, what is it that my generation is going to be, you know, frustrated about in the
one of the things 20 that years are definitely different is I don't think I've ever been to a church in the UK that has a choir.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever been to one in the UK that's
a choir. Those are really rare today.
Or even had a choir in like decades. Like I would say that is something I have experienced here. One church we did go to, it made me laugh, small church, and their choir, this is how the service started. If anyone would like to be in the choir today, just come on up.
Oh, okay.
A church of about 25 people and 10 people went up. So you got like 10 people in the choir and 15 people. And let's just say the 10 people in the choir, maybe three should be in the choir.
Yeah.
And the other seven. And like Miriam's jabbing me going, do you want to go up to the choir? Because I cannot sing. So
can I talk about a choir just for a second?
Okay.
Because we're bantering, right?
Yeah.
The thing, so it's really rare, at least the churches that I am invited to speak at or travel around to, I don't see a whole lot of choirs. No. I've seen a few. And what I always find funny is when the choir is in the choir loft for the duration of the service. So there's one thing, like when they're out there just for the singing time and then they all leave.
Yeah.
But when they're there through the sermon and you're looking at people, and I just want to say choirs should be coached to not look miserable. Yeah. You should be coached to, I'm not saying you got to be like have a dumb smile on your face the whole time, but you're giving an impression behind the preacher.
Yeah.
And it can be distracting if you just look like you hate life and hate being there. And even when you're singing, if you're in the choir, it's not just your voice that's leading us, but your demeanor. And you don't have to be like dancing and swaying around or anything, but when you just look like you hate life.
Yeah.
That's not helping.
Yep.
So I just want to put that out there for those who are still doing choirs. Maybe think through that. There's a visual aspect as much as there is an audible aspect.
I went to
the choir.
To, a church here locally, one of our professors is senior pastor there, and they have a choir, and their choir was great, fantastic. Mm. I think that was the first experience in the 3 years I've been here that the choir was great type thing.
Do they have robes and everything?
They did not.
Okay.
They did not.
That was a big deal in my home church in Houston when we went from traditional to contemporary, and they basically said, we're not doing choir anymore.
Yeah.
And you had all these people. We had the big room, the choir loft, or the choir, not the choir loft, the choir room, where they had all of the robes hanging up.
Oh, wow.
And you were basically saying to people, you know what? Bring all your dogs to church. We're going to shoot all of your dogs this Sunday. That's the impact. It felt like these people are saying, hey, we're not doing choir anymore. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is why I exist, to go put that robe on and sing in the choir, you know?
Yeah.
That was their... It was such a sacred cow, not a sacred dog, I guess, but a sacred cow.
Have you ever experienced spoken word in a church service? Where it's like a dynamic reading or memorization, a dynamic like presentation.
I think a couple times, but not very much.
I've seen it once.
Okay.
Felt odd to me personally. Mm. Just it felt like it was like drawing emotions out and, but I don't know.
I don't know if I should say this or not. This is fun. It's interesting that you asked me that, because somebody just asked me like 2 days ago, what do you think about Bible memorization? And I was like, I think it's good. But he was like, well, what about like public recitation?
I think I might know where you're going to go with this.
And I said, oh, well, that's interesting, because I think memorizing scripture is good. I think it's even a biblical thing. You know, hide God's word in your heart. But when the guys get up and they, you know, hey, so-and-so memorized Hebrews or whatever, you know, and they recited everything. There's just something about it that
feels show-off.
And I'm sure this is flesh. This is my own flesh. But yes, I sometimes feel like we're walking away not going, oh, man, scripture's so rich. Yeah. But that guy's really smart or really cool. Or
I don't think that.
How good, you know.
Yeah.
We're impressed that he did that.
Yeah.
And that seems to cut against the purpose of – I'm glad if you memorize. I'm not saying don't memorize all of Hebrews or something for yourself. But to then get up and do it in front of others when you could easily read it and have the same impression, you know. Or the impression you want. If you want the impression to be, I'm impressed with Hebrews, read it to me.
Yeah. I've experienced it in two different ways recently. When I say recently, the last couple of years. One was...
We're going to get so many letters about this, I'm sure.
A full presentation of someone's memory of the elongated passage, which I talked to a few people afterwards, and it was like, that just kind of felt odd. Felt like it was kind of showing off.
Yeah.
I've also seen, and I thought this was a really good way of doing it, where the individual was read the whole of John 1 and that, first 15 verses of John 1, it was something like that, and said that the words, look in your own Bibles, pull them up, we're starting in verse 1, follow along with me. And the individual, like, so everyone's head is like looking at their Bible, and I flicked my eyes up, they recited the entire passage, not looking at their scripture, like they had scripture open in front of them, but as they were speaking it, they were speaking it like to the congregation. And so even just as they were doing that, you could tell that like the presentation of it vocally was different than if you would have just read it straight.
Okay.
But everyone was reading their own Bibles in front of them. So there was that sense of like the guys memorized it, the guys like clearly let it go through him. That seemed better because he was saying basically, don't look at me while I'm doing this. I still wonder... Why did you do that? Like, why can't you just read it? It makes me just feel squirmy. Do you know, like it just, I don't know why you're doing this. You're proving a point.
I mean, I think maybe the best takeaway could be that it inspires others to memorize maybe. But in the same way, the inspiration is like, that's really cool. I want to do that too.
But you can do that in a different way. I'm speaking in a couple of weeks to... a university, and one of the elements I'm saying is that you're going to need verses in your back pocket that when the devil strikes with temptation or your potential to doubt it begins to increase, those words come to your mind.
I would almost say that's different. So it's different, like,
that's an encouragement.
If you and I are talking and you're quoting Bible verses because you just have them memorized, or even in teaching or preaching, if like, you know, verses are coming to mind, or you know, maybe it's in your notes, like, you know, quote this verse, and you're not reading it, you're just reciting it because you got to memorize. That's different than like, I'm going to do a recitation. that almost feels like a performance. And we've probably said way too much about this at this point.
Where I have actually seen it done well, I would say, in the service is when it comes to the Lord's table. And they recite out like Matthew 26:26. And I think that's more because of the commonality. They've read it so many times that actually they're able to lead you in it rather than like, here am I doing this. All of these things that make me squirmy within a kind of worship thing are all kind of performance based. They're at some level, there's a performance element to it. And I think the problem is, at some level, there's always going to be a performance element to it because you've got people at the front and people in the congregation. There's always that element to it. The other one that I've noticed more and more recently is songs that are I, me, and myself. There are theologically rich songs, but I struggle personally to sing them in a congregation. I'm going a little bit Alistair Begg here, but just like, I want to lift your name on high, or I want to sing your praises. There's nothing wrong with that. But when I'm in a room of 200 of my brothers and sisters that I've covenanted together in membership, I want to be saying, we sing your praises. Or like, we're coming as one body and one voice. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little bit too sensitive on this.
No, I think like a variety is good. If you're only singing I songs, that would begin to, I think, trouble me, because so much of modern evangelicalism conducts its service based on a kind of group individualism. Like, we've all come together to hear how to do things for my personal life.
Yeah, we're still doing it for me.
Yeah. It's very self-helpy message and then very individualistic songs. And then we wonder why people are not engaged in community.
Yeah.
We're not actually even inspiring them to that. So I would be concerned if it was all I stuff.
Yeah.
And I do think we ought to emphasize the corporate nature, even in preaching, like the applications and things like that, not just individualistic, but things we can apply together as a church and things. But at the same time, I wouldn't say we should, you know, get rid of them entirely. The Psalms have a variety of those things. And if the Psalm book is, you know, if the Psalms and the scriptures are our model, then I think we can have a variety of corporate and individual kind of approaches.
Another one I've dealt with recently is, and again, I wonder where you sit on this just generally, the use of the larger worship groups. I'm pretty sure we can use their names, but like Hillsong, Bethel, Elevation, being in the press for multiple theological question marks, multiple moral question marks. I'll tip my hat. I'm a no. So I don't use them. Main reason is that I won't quote somebody in my sermons if, when I know they look up that person, what they're going to see is just multiple moral issues, multiple theological issues. Now, I might say something like, I wouldn't normally quote this person. I really disagree with quite a lot of what they have said, but I think they've said this well. But even then, I'm going, I have tried to figure out another way to say
another
this.
Quote even,
So, part of me wants to guard and protect the church from going to worship groups and worship leaders and songwriters that are known for things that I just simply wouldn't want our church to go to. And I gave this example recently, which is you wouldn't have a serial adulterer preaching in your church, having, you know, just 2 years ago been accused of it. But we will sing the songs of groups that are currently going through sexual abuse cases or something like that. So I'm probably on the firmer side that currently Hillsong, Elevation, and Bethel, like I would guide our church not to sing any of them. And that's just three. There would be more. But would you be as firm as that? Would you be a little bit looser than that?
Yeah. So I think personally, I would land where you land, where like I would not choose them. And I mean, neither one of us chooses the songs at Liberty Baptist Church, but we don't use any songs from those groups. And Pastor Paul and his team do a really good job of picking good theologically sound songs from trustworthy sources. So I like, if I was choosing, I would not choose.
Yeah.
But when I am at a place and they do a song from one of those, in particular, like Elevation or maybe even Hillsong,
you don't
Bethel,
walk out.
I'm a little more sketchy on Bethel, actually, just theologically. But the other two, when there's a song and I see, Hillsong or Elevation, like
You don't walk out.
Yeah, it doesn't. I'm not overly bothered by that. Yeah. I don't think, oh, they're compromising, or I just think, yeah, they have a different,
different
preference.
Take.
And there's a few songs that I'm like, you know, I sing along. There's one particular song from Elevation Music that I'm like, that's a pretty cool song, actually, and I like when we sing it. I would not put that in my own set, but I'm not getting up in arms about it.
I think there's a difference between when you're pastoring a church and therefore your role is to guard them and keep them within the train track lines, and be like, this is good for you, this is not good for you. I think you're maybe a little bit more stricter when you are in that role, because you know that you're going to be called to account for that. Mm-hmm. But when you're visiting another church, like, I'm not called to account for how they are running their church. So,
I mean, there's probably some, we probably have some brothers who would like, they won't even sing that song, or they would make a point to, even say something to the leader about that. And I'm not there. I'm not that firm. I'm just, I wouldn't have chosen that, but I can sing along and, they just have a different viewpoint. Hey, we're at 40 minutes.
I was about to say, was like, I don't think I've got any other bantery type questions.
With preaching, we could just keep going and going and going. But the danger is with that we run into the pet peeves thing, which we've already done, worship pet peeves. So we don't want to do that necessarily.
You should listen to the worship pet peeves, actually. Go back. I've had multiple people ask me, what has been your favorite series to have done on the podcast? And I was like, you need to go back to the pet peeves.
Well, I'd also just say, if you are new to the podcast, I don't know what's stopping you from going back listening. Every now and again, we'll have somebody, when I ask for mailbag stuff, they'll say, can you answer this question? I'm like, we just did the whole episode on that like 3 months ago. Well, they just started listening. Yeah. And they're not like me. When I discover a podcast and I enjoy it, I start listening to all the backlog. And, it takes me a while, but I tend to listen to every single episode. So there's some good stuff, Ross wasn't always the co-host, believe it or not. There's been a couple other co-hosts. You can go back, see, you can compare them. You can send us letters, say how Ross ranks.
We're getting close to our 100th episode together.
I think you and I have been together the longest out of all the co-hosts.
We're getting close.
But there's there's all kinds of...
Does that mean I'm on the chopping block?
Interesting
soon.
Episodes. No. That's all up to you.
It's a little bit.
I think... You're talking doctoral studies, aren't you?
Well, yeah.
We don't need to get into that, but that might keep you here for a little while longer.
That might be a whole episode in itself, determining the will of God in my life.
That'd be another 100 episodes might take place. If you enjoy the podcast, dear listener, give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.